Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have,
yes, we did.
Solar-topia.
We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dara Williams with Pete Seeger and David Burns singing our theme song, the Solartopia song. Back for another week here. It's always a joy to be introduced by Pete Seeger. David Burns and Dara Williams, those are the Rivertown Kids on their Grammy-winning show, Grammy-winning album, Grammy-winning CD, whatever you want to call it, Tomorrow's Children. We have a special show today. We're going to be talking about the Devil's Nuke, and that is Diablo Canyon, the two reactors between Los Angeles and San Francisco, about 8 miles due west of San Luis Obispo, California, a place where I had the pleasure of being nonviolently arrested in 1984. Spent three lovely nights in the San Luis Obispo County Jail, which I highly recommend. Food's not great. The attire they make you wear, those orange jumpsuits, polyester, not the best, but a wonderful company and a great experience. And I'm sure many of us will be back there soon. We are joined by the great David Lockbaum of the Union of Concerned Scientists. David has been on the case for many, many years and has responded, shall we say, to a very important new study. Actually, it's not so new. It's been around for a year, I believe, kind of hidden in plain sight, as it were, from an insider, a Nuclear Regulatory Commission insider warning that Diablo Canyon does not meet basic earthquake standards, not even to mention fire standards and other things like that. David, are you with us? David Lockbaum.
Yes, I am, Harvey. Thanks for having me on.
Well, David, it's great to have you. It's always an honor. You are so knowledgeable and full of concern, important concern for this situation. The Diablo Canyon scares the hell out of me, as it does many, many people, and for good reason. We have, thankfully, had the good fortune to shut the other two reactors in California, San Onofre, between Los Angeles and San Diego within the past year. But Diablo Canyon, sitting upstate, somewhat newer, has escaped the long arm of citizen action. And I'd like you, if you wouldn't mind, David, to tell us a bit about this report. Thanks to Friends of the Earth for unearthing it somehow. What does this report say about the seismic abilities of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant and its vulnerability to earthquakes?
Yeah, the report was written by Dr. Michael Peck, who for several years was the NRC's Nuclear Regulatory Commission's senior resident inspector at Diablo Canyon. Dr. Peck was in that role in late 2008 when Pacific Gas and Electric notified the NRC that a new fault had been found just offshore of the Diablo Canyon site, about 300 yards out into the water. Dr. Peck did his duty, which was to evaluate this newly identified hazard and compare it against the licensing criteria, the safety criteria that the NRC has to manage the risks from such hazards, and found that it fell short of those standards. So therefore, he recommended the plant not operate until those shortcomings were corrected. The agency decided to ignore or downplay the new hazards and allow the plant to continue running. And Dr. Peck last October wrote what the agency calls a differing professional opinion, listing, it's like 42 pages long, listing the many reasons why this plant is unsafe using the NRC's own safety standards. The agency has a standard for reviewing those things, I think, within 90 days, and it took them about 9 months, apparently it's not 90 consecutive days, to review those concerns. They still haven't finally ruled on his decision. They're keeping it silent, keeping it secret, because they really don't have a good story to tell.
So do you have a date on when Dr. Peck first issued these opinions on the situation at Diablo Canyon?
It was sometime in late October. I don't have the exact date. The NRC didn't until June 24th of this year decided that his issues had no merit. He then appealed that decision, and the NRC's his appeal is currently still being reviewed by the NRC.
And how did this? I assume the NRC did not want this report made public, or is that unfair to the NRC, or is this a public document?
Well, the way the process works is Dr. Peck has a choice of making it public once the NRC reaches a final decision. They've not yet reached a final decision, so whether he wants it public or not, the document is not made public. Friends of the Earth obtained a copy, not from Dr. Peck, but from some other source, and posted it on their website and gave it to reporters to call a spotlight to this unsafe condition. And my hat's off to Friends of the Earth for doing that great public service.
And we don't know how they got it, but that's fine with me. So the situation at Diablo Canyon, my understanding now, and I've drafted a piece, which I will be putting out after this show, and we will embed the URL to get to the archives to look at this show or to listen to this show, and I will post the piece at PRN and elsewhere, but I wanted to get through the show and make sure everything was accurate. And we're joined now, let me just interrupt real quickly, by Rochelle Becker. Rochelle, are you with us?
Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Rochelle. Okay, so hi. Rochelle, I'm honored by two of the great stalwarts of the safe energy situation in this world, David Lochbaum of the Union Concerned Scientists, and now Rochelle Becker of the Alliance for Survival in California. Rochelle, you've been campaigning especially on Diablo Canyon, on nuclear in general, but especially on Diablo Canyon for many years, and coming from California, are certainly one of the leading experts on the situation. So let's look at Diablo Canyon for a minute, the reality of this situation. You have two very large reactors. They opened in the mid to late 1980s, due west of San Luis Obispo by about 8 miles, in the middle of California, on the coast, at a place called Avila Bay. And at the time that the reactors were under construction, a fault line was discovered called the Hosgree Fault, about 3 miles offshore from Diablo Canyon. And it's my understanding, and correct me, either one of you, if I'm wrong, that the designers of Diablo Canyon, the builders of Diablo Canyon, primarily Pacific Gas and Electric, which supplies electricity to much of Northern California, and especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. Well, let me ask you, let's put it this way. Did PG&E ever fully alter the designs of the Diablo Canyon reactors to account for the possibility of a major quake from the Hosgree Fault?
Well, in the opinion, and let me just correct real quickly, Harvey, you said Alliance for Survival, which is a wonderful organization, but it's not us. We're the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. I just didn't want people going to that website and not finding any information.
Yes, please. And your website is, give us
A4,
your website.
A4, the number 4NR.org.
A4NR.org. And David, you are at UCS.org?
It's UCSUSA.org.
UCSUSA.org. Okay, one word. And both websites are extremely important and critical to the ongoing situation at Diablo Canyon. So please clarify now, did Pacific Gas and Electric make sufficient response in the design criteria in building Diablo Canyon to account for the newly found Hosgree Fault?
The answer is no. They originally designed not looking offshore for an earthquake fault. It was discovered by Shell Oil several years into construction and about $2.5 billion into construction. PG&E did go back, look at the earthquake faults, redesign the plant to withstand a, quote, 7.5 earthquake on the Hosgree Fault. However, there's huge confusion on whether the 7.5 original design was for the Hosgree fault or was for a assumed fault right underneath the plant. So I think that that's part of the confusion. A new earthquake follows, that's part of the confusion. PG&E has done millions, if not billions, of dollars of earthquake studies over the years. The plant is still not deemed earthquake safe by most seismologists. There's a lot of fudge factors involved. There's a lot of unusual scientific theories involved that basically just let PG&E meet the criteria for an earthquake fault at Diablo Canyon. But it's only a movement in one way. There's several ways an earthquake fault can move. Is it a slip strike fault? Is it a thrust fault? What is the new fault? Is the new fault connected to the old fault? The list goes on forever. And magnifies confusion as it magnifies questions. And the NRC fails to look at this seriously. What PG&E needs to do is file a license amendment request to meet the criteria of the actual design basis. And it filed one, then took it back. The NRC actually coached them to file a license amendment request. Union of Concerned Scientists did a wonderful report, which is on our website and I'm sure on theirs, that was submitted to Congress last year on Dr. Peck's information, but we had been very careful as Union of Concerned Scientists to honor Dr. Peck's wish that we did not make this public. But we are delighted that it has been made public. We hope Dr. Peck can go further with this now. And there's also other concerns about tsunamis that have been raised in the last month. A tsunami report that was turned over to the NRC that the NRC refuses to give not only to the public, but to PG&E.
Whoa. First of all, who did this tsunami report?
Dr. Robert Sewell. He was commissioned by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The information is on our website. He did it in 2005, before the discovery of the new earthquake fault, the shoreline fault. Dr. Sewell submitted his report. We asked the NRC for a copy of that report and got something like 68 blank pages back. We went to Dr. Sewell and said, can you give us a copy of this report? They said, well, I was a consultant for the NRC. I can't release the report. Our understanding is that now Senator Boxer has a copy of the report, but she's not sure she can release it. We have requested that the county, a tsunami not only affects the nuclear plant, but also affects this entire county, so they should ask for a copy of the report. The Public Utilities Commission that makes these decisions should ask for a copy of this report. So there's, on top of questionable earthquake activity, there is also questionable tsunami activity at Diablo Canyon. So these questions, and all these questions end up costing money, which comes out of ratepayer pockets. So the Alliance, unlike the Union of Concerned Scientists and other wonderful environmental groups who focus on the safety of nuclear power plants, we actually use what the safety costs, go to the state agencies and say, you need to do your job because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not doing theirs.
David Lockbaum, you have been with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on the inside and, of course, on the outside at this point. What's your take on the various earthquake studies at Diablo Canyon, and how vulnerable is Diablo Canyon to being, shall we say, leveled, turned to rubble or whatever by an earthquake?
Well, Rochelle mentioned that Pacific Gas and Electric had submitted a license amendment request to the NRC and then withdrew it. Along the way, the NRC had asked Pacific Gas and Electric to identify the times that it deviated from the NRC's accepted standards in the analysis it did for the Hosgree fault and then the more recent shoreline fault. In December of 2011, PG&E sent a 300-plus page table back to the NRC that listed all the different deviations in the methods and the assumptions that it used to get the right answer, in quotes, at Diablo Canyon. Each of those pages listed like four or five differences between what's accepted by the NRC and what they did. And that's what Dr. Peck is upset about, is that that methodology is unacceptable to the NRC. That's why PG&E withdrew the application. But that's the only thing showing that that plant is safe, a entirely bogus analysis. And that's what's protecting the lives of, what's protecting the lives of Californians right now is luck. That plant's protected against an earthquake unless one occurs, and that's not the way it's supposed to work.
I like that. It's protected unless one occurs. Well, let's talk about Diablo Canyon now. These two reactors, very big ones, sit. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have counted mention of five earthquake faults near Diablo Canyon. We have the Hosgri Fault, which is offshore, which was discovered by an oil company as Diablo Canyon was in the midst of pretty far along, actually, in construction. There is also, I've read of the San Luis Bay earthquake fault, the Shoreline earthquake fault. There's one other there that I'm missing.
The Los Osos Fault.
Which one?
Los Osos Fault.
Oh, Sosos, the Los Osos Fault.
And then the Diablo Cove Fault as well.
The what is that?
Diablo Cove Fault.
Okay, so we've got Diablo, let's count them up here. We got the Hosgri, and then we got Diablo Cove, Los Osos, Shoreline, and San Luis Bay. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. And a few
and
other
then,
question
so
marks.
That's four. Is that five?
Five.
That's five. And then, to top it off, we have the San Andreas Fault. Now, the San Andreas Fault is, to my understanding, 45 miles away. However, the epicenter of the earthquake that caused the tsunami, the two of which destroyed Fukushima, was 120 kilometers. The epicenter was 120 kilometers. So essentially, the San Andreas Fault, which everybody knows about, of course, is about half the distance from San Luis Obispo, from Diablo Canyon, as was the earthquake fault that destroyed Fukushima. Is that correct?
Correct.
So we're talking about six earthquake faults here, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we have six earthquake faults to deal with around this nuclear power plant. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, David Lockbaum and Rochelle Becker. This nuclear plant, if it experienced a tsunami, according to Arne Gunderson, the great nuclear engineer based in Vermont, Diablo Canyon is not as close to ocean level, sea level as Fukushima 1, 2, 3, 4 were. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It's how high in the air is it?
About 85 feet above.
85 feet above, which I understand is about the height of the original bluff where Fukushima was built, but then they took down the bluff. But at Diablo Canyon, for better or worse, they left the bluff intact. So these two reactors are 85 feet off the sea level, but you do have intake pipes at sea level.
Correct. And according to Arne Gunderson, what Dr. Sewell is concerned about is the intake pipes.
Yes, according to Arne Gunderson, the tsunami at Fukushima essentially, and I'll paraphrase, turned the intake mechanisms, pipes, etc., into a pile of twisted rubble. Is that about right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would happen at Diablo Canyon, I assume, if there was a tsunami.
It could. I mean, there are different reactors. I mean, I don't know if they're analogous. They're different reactors. They're different designs. However, it would certainly immediately do away with 2,200 megawatts of power, no way that plant would ever go back online. It may or may not cause a radioactive release. Whether it does or not would certainly destroy property values in the state and probably send people running from this area. So the economic impacts, whether or not there's a radioactive release, would be huge in San Luis Obispo County. We have lots of agriculture. We have lots of tourism. It would just be destroyed. Nobody's going to buy wine from San Luis Obispo if we have a radioactive release at Diablo Canyon. So they all have economic bases as well. But two things also happened at the PUC that I want to raise with you, Harvey, because 2 weeks ago, the Public Utilities Commission granted two of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility's contentions. One is that the state of California has equal jurisdiction over seismic issues with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. What we have is a Coastal Zone Management Act, which the Coastal Commission has final say, along with the NRC, and if they say that plant's not seismically safe, that means that plant will not get a license renewal and may not continue to run. The Public Utilities Commission also decided, which is unprecedented as far as we know, that the Public Utilities Commission will no longer grant PG&E money to build out its pads for dry cask storage unless they hand them an expedited plan for moving this waste out of the pools into dry cask storage. So Diablo Canyon's on its last legs. It's an aging plant. the likelihood of it getting a license renewal is probably under 10%. It will be an economic decision, but in the meantime, as Dave says, the only thing keeping us safe is luck.
Dave Lockbaum, what would a tsunami do to the, thank you, Rochelle. What would a tsunami do to the intake pipes? Would a tsunami seriously threaten Diablo Canyon?
It very well could, even though it's elevated at a higher elevation than Fukushima was. The Dr. Sewell's report showed that, I think he analyzed 15 different scenarios, different earthquake locations, magnitudes, tsunami heights, and so on, and the vast majority of his 15 cases showed that Diablo Canyon would suffer a meltdown. Sometimes it was the intake structure that failed. Sometimes the floodwaters got higher and actually took out the power, as they did at Fukushima. But in the vast majority of cases, the plant lost.
Okay, and then we lose. So let's talk a minute about these plants. These are Westinghouse reactors. The ones at Fukushima were General Electric. But nonetheless, PWR, pressurized water reactor, which these are, has its own set of vulnerabilities. At least one thing we can say for Diablo Canyon, the spent fuel pool is not 100 feet in the air above the reactor. But I guess given 85 feet above sea level, that's a slightly different story. And Rochelle, that is shocking news. I'm glad to hear that the California Public Utilities Commission has made these decisions. Quite astounding given the nature of the chair, Michael Peavy, who's been known to be very much in the camp of the utility company. So this was quite a surprising decision, yes?
It was a surprising decision, but one I don't think they could have turned their back on. The Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility is represented in our Public Utilities Commission cases by a former energy commissioner. And so he pretty much understands PUC law. He understands what's needed in California when it comes to meeting our energy needs. He certainly understands the nuclear issue quite well, and he has the equal respect of all the other commissioners at the PUC because he was a former commissioner himself at the Energy Commission. He did a great job of looking at the decision and saying, wait a minute, if you make this decision, California, you're about to undo years of California law that says you do have jurisdiction over these plants. So you need to confirm your jurisdiction rather than step away from it, and that's exactly what they did.
Okay, now let's look, and congratulations on that. I know that your organization and your particular work has made that decision possible, because there's just no way that we can get a favorable decision out of the CPUC without the kind of work that's gone into this. And I hope everyone listening understands the tremendous amount of work and fundraising and other energies that it takes to even get in front of the CPUC. So congratulations on that. Now, let's look at the realities of what Diablo Canyon actually is. You're talking about two, are they 1,100 megawatts reactors?
Mm-hmm.
Are they twins? Are they identical? Okay, so except for the one where the reactor pressure vessel was put in upside down,
right.
Misreading of the well, we won't talk about the misreading of the blueprints that were uncovered only because people were marching and delayed the reactor going online. You have two 1,100 megawatt reactors, which is pretty much as big as they get.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we've got up to 1,200. David Lockbaum, what's the biggest single reactor that we know of? In terms of megawattage?
I think the Palo Verde reactor in Arizona is about 1,400 megawatts, each of those three reactors there.
Okay, so we're over 1,000 megawatts. We're in the order of magnitude of the biggest reactors there are. Now, surrounded by five or six earthquake faults, the Diablo Canyon reactors could be, and tell me if I'm hyperbolizing here, given what we saw at Fukushima and the damage that was done by the earthquakes there, a worst-case scenario, I suppose, at Diablo Canyon would be simply that these reactors are reduced to rubble. I assume that there is somewhere in the seismic world an earthquake strong enough just to shake these things to gravel. Is that overstating the case?
I think a little bit. I think the major concern with an earthquake at a nuclear power plant is that the ground motion, the shaking, causes walls and floors to move up and down, and the pipes that go through those walls get cut off like knives. You're slicing through butter. And therefore, the pumps that need to put water into the reactor core are sending water onto the floor instead, and the water that was in the reactor vessel cooling the reactor core is now also joining the puddle on the floor, and that didn't do too good at Fukushima. It wouldn't do too good at Diablo Canyon either.
And it also wouldn't do too well in the spent fuel pools. You would also lose cooling in the spent fuel pools.
The one advantage the spent fuel pools have is that their walls and floor don't have any holes in them, so that it takes, instead of the water draining out of the pools, the water has to boil away, which it can do. It just takes longer, and that gives workers more time to do something about it. They were able to use that time to their advantage at Fukushima with the helicopter drops and the fire trucks. They weren't able to use less time to prevent three reactor cores from melting down there. But there's no guarantees, but the more time you have, the more likely you are to get something to work.
Although there is a general belief that at least some of the reactors, the fuel rods at Fukushima 4, were exposed to air. Is that correct?
I don't believe that at all. No?
Okay.
Nope.
All right. So at any rate, a worst-case scenario at Diablo Canyon, and we can choose from our various earthquake faults to deliver the blow, massive quantities of radiation could, in fact, be released. Is that correct?
That is, yeah.
Okay, and Rochelle, of course, you would agree with that. So these reactors are directly upwind of virtually the entire continental United States. And I assume a radioactive cloud in general would be assumed not to go up to, say, the Pacific Northwest and maybe miss parts of Southern California. But the main cloud, the main radioactive nightmare, from Diablo Canyon would just go straight across. Prevailing winds would send it straight across to the United States, and our experience would be that the radiation could reach the east coast of the United States, having gone all the way across, within about 4 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, depending on the winds, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission only has emergency planning out to 10 miles and only stockpiles potassium iodide out to 10 miles. So they must not think it's going to get that far.
Right. Well, it's nice to know the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has a sense of humor.
But if you looked at the weather patterns the day of the accident in Japan, had that accident happened in San Luis Obispo rather than in Japan, the way the winds were blowing that day, the radiation pattern actually would have skipped most of San Luis Obispo County and gone directly into Santa Barbara County. So it was south-southwest or southeast. Quite often, because we're sort of in a cove, the radiation or the wind pattern kind of goes by us and moves to the south of us and then goes inland. But it's a huge agricultural belt for the state of California, not to mention the people that eat the food and live here.
Okay. And after going through California, of course, in Fukushima, at Fukushima, thankfully, my understanding is that the prevailing winds did not take the radiation into Tokyo, which is less than 200 miles away, and with about 15 or more million or more people. Is that correct?
It's correct. It gets a little confusing at that point because some of the U.S. naval bases in Japan that were even further away than Tokyo registered higher readings than closer facilities. So we're still trying to track the ground what those different readings are. Was it an instrumentation problems, or was the wind and the rain and the various combinations causing hot spots that were, in some cases, further away than Tokyo and uh-huh. Fukushima's immediate surroundings? The bad thing is, Rochelle alluded to, radiation doesn't follow a straight line and stop after a certain distance. It can cause problems, and then rainfall and other things can, even when it comes to the ground, water can transport it places it shouldn't be. So once it gets out, you're in trouble.
Right. So what kind of trouble are we talking about here? We know, for example, that after Chernobyl, radiation was detected on the west coast of the United States, especially at Point Reyes, north of San Francisco, within 10 days. And there are those who claim to have registered radiation releases from Fukushima on the west coast of the United States within a week. What would we expect in terms of the continental United States? What would we expect to see or feel or register from a radioactive cloud, God forbid, released at Diablo Canyon?
There's so many variables there. You could go either high or low or in the middle, depending on, you know, pick an answer. You pretty much anything. Getting back to Chernobyl, the 5 years after that accident, the Wall Street Journal ran an article about the cost of Chernobyl, and it was estimated that the cost of cleanup and the damages resulting from the 1986 accident at Chernobyl more than outweighed the benefits from more than four dozen reactors that had operated in the Soviet Union back to 1954. So one accident at one facility outweighed the economic benefits from dozens of reactors for decades. Not too many technologies have such a perverse risk-reward scenario.
I would say none, actually. And, of course, we had four explosions and three meltdowns at Fukushima. God knows how that stacks up against the alleged benefits of the operations of the reactors, the 54 reactors that eventually got licensed in Japan. So my understanding, looking at the maps, and by way of disclosure, I did spend three nights in the San Luis County Jail in 1984. Rochelle, have you visited the county jail in San Luis Obispo?
Actually, my visit to the jail was only to bring all those people that had been arrested toothbrushes. So actually, I have not been inside of those jail walls.
Well, I got one of those toothbrushes, so
well,
thank
good.
You very much. I appreciate it. Okay, so my supposition here is that of all the reactors in the United States, the one that is likeliest to be able to irradiate almost the entire United States are the two at Diablo Canyon. And the prevailing winds, which come from the west and go to the east, would carry radiation from Diablo Canyon, God forbid, all the way across the United States. So this is very much a national issue. I should also point out that more people have been arrested at Diablo Canyon than at any other nuclear plants in the United States. By the time 1984 rolled around, there were about 10,000 people arrested there. And Rochelle, now you have said that because of the what's gone on there, you don't think it's likely that Diablo Canyon can be relicensed. When do the current licenses expire for the two reactors at Diablo Canyon?
Expire in 2024 for Unit 1 and 2025 for Unit 2. But PG&E is facing some huge economic investments if they want to keep these plants going. Whether or not they will build alternatives to the devastation that's happened by once through cooling could be anywhere from $6 to $14 billion and take about 10 years to really put the project in place. They have seismic retrofits that are likely on the horizon if they continue to operate. They will need to expedite the fuel out of the pools into the dry cask storage, which is a higher cost. PG&E is facing some huge costs on top of some huge fines. This is the only utility that runs a nuclear plant in the United States that is under 28 felony indictments for its gas division. Same management.
Wait. 28 felony indictments for what?
Federal felony indictments for blowing up the town of San Bruno, blowing up 40 homes, killing 8 people, blowing up another home in Carmel. They have 28 federal indictments against them right now. So they're facing some pretty hefty fines, and I believe the court has now ruled that shareholders can sue the management over these. So they're facing those fines as well.
All right, so can shareholders, you're saying shareholders can sue. What about ratepayers? Can ratepayers sue Pacific Gas and Electric?
I believe the ratepayers that were involved in the San Bruno explosions have mostly settled their cases by now, although the city of San Bruno and the county still have outstanding claims against PG&E.
All right, so Rochelle, I need you to explain to our listeners what happened in San Bruno. Where is San Bruno?
San Bruno is between San Jose and San Francisco in Northern California, and PG&E had inadequately maintained their gas lines, even though ratepayers have been paying for them to maintain them, and they had an explosion in 2008, and it blew up 40 homes in that area and killed 8 people. Two of those people worked at the Public Utilities Commission.
Two of those people what?
Worked at the Public Utilities Commission.
Oh, my God. And what happened in the in the aftermath of this explosion and these deaths? I assume we can call them murders, basically.
Well, the PUC has taken action, and today they announced a proposed decision of a $1.4 billion fine and all kinds of new safety rules that they put into place for Edison and PG&E, the gas company and PG&E's gas company in the state of California. So the PUC had some culpability for not making sure they'd maintain those gas lines as well.
And that's today they made this announcement.
And handed out 15 federal indictments in the spring and just changed that in August to 28 felony indictments.
Now, is this against the company or individuals in the company?
This is against the company, but the courts have also ruled that individuals can be sued in the management, at least by shareholders so far.
All right, so David Lockbaum, we are Whitney. You have both of you, with all your experience, with David, you were an insider to Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We have now I think PG&E at one point, I don't know if it still is, was the world's biggest private electric utility company. It's an enormous operation. They what year was the San Bruno explosion?
2008.
The company that operates these two gargantuan reactors at San Luis Obispo failed to maintain gas lines in the city of San Bruno. And I've seen some of the documents that indicate that they were warned repeatedly about this possibility. Were these explosions caused by an earthquake?
No
earthquake. So even without an earthquake, they blew up a town, essentially, 30 homes, killed 8 people. And I have finally, 6 years later, been fined almost $1.5 billion.
Fines as well.
Excuse me?
There could be federal fines as well. That's just the state fines.
Oh, so we haven't gotten to the feds yet?
Nope.
Okay, so this is the very same company now operating 2 reactors on the coast of California, surrounded by 6 earthquake faults in a tsunami zone. How do you, David, David Lockbaum, as a nuclear regulator or a former one, feel about this company operating these 2 reactors?
Well, I mean, even if they were the best actor in the world, those plants are unsafe. They don't meet earthquake protections. They don't meet fire protection regulations. They're not ready for prime time. So the fact that they're also operated by a company that has some, a checkered past, just is like lead paint on a grenade. It's still a problem, but it's the shrapnel that will get you.
Lead paint on a grenade. That's a great one. I like that. Okay, so what is our, realistically, David Lockbaum, what is our risk at Diablo Canyon? Give us a thumbnail, if you would, about what could happen there and PG&E's ability to safely maintain this place.
Well, Dr. Sewell's report looked at what are the chances of a tsunami wave getting high enough to put the plant in distress. And he calculated, depending on the various scenarios, numbers in the range of 1 in 2,000, 1 in 3,000 years for various scenarios, some even far more remote than that. That seems like it's very rare. 1 in 3,000 years seems like pretty good odds. But the chances that a tsunami wave would overtop the wall at Fukushima had been calculated to be 1 in 3,500 years. So it's more likely that Diablo Canyon will face distress than Fukushima was. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But the way we look at it is, if it does happen, the federal government should be able to look at the survivors in the eyes and said, look, we did everything we could to protect your family members, but it happened anyway. Right now, they can't say that because they know that plant's not safe. The report we did last year, Seismic Shift for Rochelle's group, went back through 4 decades of precedents. In every other case, the NRC didn't allow the plant to continue operating with suspect earthquake protection. Diablo Canyon is the sole exception to that, and we don't understand why the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is gambling with the lives of Californians.
And not just Californians. I mean, obviously, the radioactive cloud would go far beyond California in a worst-case scenario at Diablo Canyon. Now, Rochelle, do you have any explanation why the NRC continues to allow Diablo Canyon to operate?
Oh, my God, no. I really honestly don't. I can't understand why people who have a scientific background, a technical background, can look at the same information that we have seen or the information that has been hidden from the public and make decisions with a straight face. They don't pass the straight face test. I don't know how they look at us and do that. I think that because they're on the other side of the country and haven't sat through earthquakes, perhaps, maybe they're just a little more blasé about it. But it's unconscionable what the NRC is doing, and not allowing the state of California to see a tsunami report that it could affect our coast is absolutely unconscionable.
To be partially fair to the NRC, in 1997, 9 of the nation's 104 nuclear power plants didn't operate at all because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was holding them down until they fixed safety problems. The nuclear industry didn't like that, and they got the United States Congress to threaten to cut the NRC's budget unless the agency knocked it off. So the NRC stopped fining people, changed how it oversaw safety. And I think the NRC is more concerned about their jobs than they are about the lives of Rochelle and other people in California. And they need to be equally concerned about both and not only about their own jobs.
Well, all right. Now, let's talk about state issues here, Rochelle. You mentioned something about once through cooling. Could the state of California, could the governor actually do anything to shut these reactors in the short term?
Yes, the state of California could. I sit on the oversight committee for the nuclear plants for once through cooling, and we've been meeting for about 2 years now, and we have a report that should be officially released sometime this fall. And the report was done by, we hired Bechtel as consultants, so it's an inside industry report. I think that the utility hopes that this huge cost that it would take to provide the alternatives to once the devastation that went through cooling are just too expensive, and the state of California says, you know, we can't make the utility do that. They'd go out of business if they did that. I'm sure that's the utility's position. There are environmental groups, including Friends of the Earth, who think there are less expensive ways to put in the alternatives. There is a Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee who thinks, A, that Bechtel's wrong, that there will be license amendment requests, which will again increase the price of this project, or B, may not be safe in the way that they're being done. Those haven't been incorporated into the final report yet. The position of the Alliances for Nuclear Responsibility is allow the plant to operate to the end of its license if it can do so safely and cost effectively, which we doubt either one, but if they can, that's fine. But at the end of its license, it must close because it cannot meet the once through cooling standards that were released by the EPA, and we're not going to give them another 20 years to break that law.
Well, tell us about once through cooling. What is the issue here?
1 million gallons a minute goes through this nuclear plant to keep it cool, to keep it operating, and to keep it cool.
These million gallons a minute come from the Avila Bay there, which is on the coast of the Pacific.
Right. Comes out of the Pacific Ocean. There's sort of a bay there. Draws in water. While it's drawing in water, it can impinge small sea life, and about 700 to 1,000 fish or small mammals get impinged by this once through cooling annually. But more importantly, the entrainment of the larvae from the sea life around there is huge. This is millions of little larvae that get sucked into the plant and never get to grow up as big fish. So the food chain is devastated by this process. And 78% of the once through cooling devastation in the state of California is at Diablo Canyon. San Onofre closed down in 2012, will never reoperate. So that devastation has stopped. It's down to maybe using 2% of a problem now. Other plants located on our coast that used once through cooling have all been required to either shut down or renovate their plants so they don't devastate the marine environment. If they don't force PG&E to do something different so it reduces the amount of impact from this once through cooling, this water cooling that they use, then it will be the only electric facility on the coast of California that wasn't required to do what the EPA has voted that they do. So there's some question marks around this. It's a big decision that will happen at the Water Board. It actually is a good out for PG&E, because PG&E could say, you know, the plant's seismically safe. We can operate, you know, for until the end of our license seismically, but we're going to have to close it down because the investment right now to for the alternatives to once through cooling just makes our plant no longer cost effective. It would be
and the alternative would be cooling towers. Is that correct?
The alternative is cooling towers, which would, if put in the parking lot right now, would probably be about $4 billion, $5 billion, if it could be done safely, and there's a lot of question marks around that, or putting it further inland, which would mean they'd have to clear off another 670 feet of the mountain range that is right on the coastal mountain range, and then build 570-foot-tall cooling towers. I doubt that it would ever get a permit from the coastal zone. So, and Bechtel did not anticipate any legal challenges to the final plan, which in California has got to be the biggest joke around.
Mind-boggling. David Lockman, you want to comment on the cooling issues at Diablo Canyon?
Well, I think you and Rochelle both touched on something that the state could, this could be the last straw for Diablo Canyon. The state of New Jersey a few years ago negotiated with the owner of the Oyster Creek nuclear plant that was seeking a 20-year extension to its operating license. The state was concerned about water usage issues similar to Diablo Canyon and worked out a deal with the company that it would run for less than half of that the requested 20-year extension time and then permanently close. So the company avoided the cost of putting in the cooling towers, and the state avoided 20 more years of aquatic wildlife devastation. So a similar thing could happen in California and elsewhere.
But that required the state of New Jersey to hold the owners of Oyster Creek accountable. Why isn't the state of California doing this?
We're not to that point yet. That decision has right now we have looked at the alternative technologies, and that review is being put in final form. Probably by the end of this year, we'll know a whole lot more.
Yeah, New Jersey followed a similar process. They did an evaluation, determined what the costs were so they could make an informed decision. I didn't mean to imply that New Jersey was more progressive or more aggressive than California was. It just, they were different at similar points in a timeline. It's behind Oyster Creek.
Right.
Well, I assume this was done when the governor previous to Chris Christie was in office.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, now we have Jerry Brown. And Jerry Brown actually spoke at Diablo Canyon. I know. I was there. I believe it was in 1980 or so. Rochelle, do you remember when Jerry Brown spoke?
I think it was 81, but yeah.
1981, he spoke there. There was Linda Ronstadt was there, and he was very forceful against Diablo Canyon. But now we haven't heard much. Could the ratepayers of Northern California in the PG&E territory withhold their payment of their bills to PG&E and go through an appeals process to force this to happen? Rochelle, have you had experience, any knowledge of that?
I doubt you can get that many ratepayers to do anything consistently because your bill isn't reflective enough. I mean, your bill is, I mean, my bill is like $20 a month when I use a lot of power. I'm pretty frugal about power, but even if your bill is a couple hundred dollars a month, you're probably not going to take the time to try to do that. I do know that when there's been a decision that I didn't like at the Public Utilities Commission, I have asked what that decision is costing me, and I have deducted a nickel from my bill every month since the year 1984. It just makes me feel good to do that. It's not a whole lot of money, but every month I deduct a nickel from a decision that was made at the Public Utilities Commission that I completely disagreed with. And what people can do is write a letter to the PUC and say, I'm just not going to pay for this. I'm letting you know. If you want me to send it to you, that's fine. I will not send it to the utility. And, I mean, I did that in 1984. Now I just deduct a nickel every month, and it just makes me feel good. But it doesn't do anything other than that. I think that the best thing people can do is seriously support the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility because we are making huge headways at the Public Utilities Commission on behalf of ratepayers. And that's where your voice is. If it wasn't for the Alliance, there would be no voice at the Public Utilities Commission on Diablo Canyon. They filed for a license renewal several years ago in 2010, and because the Alliance was filed in that case and we said, wait a minute, you have no idea what this will cost, and we held them off And they eventually denied PG&E the amount of money and said, come back when you do know what this is going to cost. Japan happened. They haven't been back to the Public Utilities Commission to go for it again. That was one small group, and at that time without an attorney. So having a voice at the Public Utilities Commission is invaluable. But, you know, oversight agencies are nowhere near the nuclear plants are. They're several hundred miles away. So it does take a concerted effort to make sure you're at every proceeding, whether it's Energy Commission, Coastal Commission, Public Utilities Commission, Water Board. You have a face in that room that says, I am a ratepayer, and your decisions are coming out of my pocket. They better be just and reasonable.
And David Lochbaum, the Union of Concerned Scientists, has been a face at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So between all these commissions, what is the prognosis for getting these two reactors shut before the next earthquake does it for us or to us?
Well, we could have an earthquake while we're talking, so I can't predict earthquakes. But I can predict that the people of California are doing everything they can to make sure this plant is shut down as quickly as possible.
David?
I think one of the things that helps that prognosis is the fact that Senator Boxer is on the chair of an NRC Oversight Committee, or at least she is in this Congress. She has put a lot of pressure on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, hasn't been fully successful across the board, but it's not for lack of her trying to lead some reform. So I think her calling the NRC to task to get this Dr. Sewell's report, get some of this out there. We're hearing rumors that the next oversight hearing will be focused on earthquake protection at Diablo Canyon. They don't have a good story to tell, and if forced to come before the American public and try to explain what they're not doing out there, I think that will lead to things getting fixed quickly.
Thanks, Dave. You're absolutely right. Senator Boxer has been amazing, and we are very fortunate to have her.
Okay, so, David, when you say things getting fixed, are we talking about making the plant safer, or are we talking about shutting it down?
The choice would be the companies. The San Onofre Unit 1 reactor had some similar earthquake problems in the early 90s, and it was shut down for 11 months while workers upgraded systems so that pipes would be better protected against shaking during an earthquake and more likely survive that. After those fixes were implemented, the plant restarted. So it's up to the owner to decide, you know, do I want to pay for these fixes or do I want to not operate? But you shouldn't. Being a nuclear outlaw shouldn't be one of the options that you have.
And you've used this term nuclear outlaw. Tell us what that, we're running out of time. But when David Lochbaum uses the term nuclear outlaw, we're in serious trouble here. So what do you mean by nuclear outlaw?
Well, there are fire protection regulations that the company and the NRC both understand that Diablo Canyon has never met for a single second over its entire lifetime. Those regulations are supposed to protect the public from a fire, but that's only if they're followed. Likewise, there are seismic earthquake protection, earthquake regulations on the books that Diablo Canyon doesn't meet. Well, safety IOUs don't protect anybody. They just make it easier for the lawyers to sue the guilty after the fact. We need to fix that.
Yes, and you mentioned to me in an email that there's fire, in addition to not meeting seismic safety standards, earthquake safety standards, Diablo Canyon does not meet basic fire protection standards. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, after the 1975 fire at Browns Ferry, where a candle started a fire that wiped out all the cables for the safety systems, the NRC adopted regulations that's supposed to make it less likely that a single fire will knock out primary safety systems and their backups. Diablo Canyon does not meet those regulations and has a plan for someday meeting it sometime down the road. But until then, the plant's at great risk. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission estimates that the chance of fire causing a meltdown is about 50% of the things that can lead to a core meltdown, which means the fire hazard is equal to all other hazards combined. And that's if you meet the regulations. If you don't meet the regulations, the risk goes up and the justification for continuing to operate goes down.
So in addition to all the earthquake issues, we have serious fire protection issues. Anything else you want to throw into the hopper here?
Well, they wear nice ties.
All right. Well, David Lockbaum and Rochelle Becker, this is enough to scare the pants off of anybody. I have seen these reactors. They are very formidable. They do pose a threat to the entire United States of America. Of course, they're not the only reactors at seismic risk. I have been led to understand that the two that are operating at Indian Point are actually more at risk from earthquake damage than Diablo Canyon. Does that have any meaning?
Well, that was based on prior to Fukushima, the NRC did a study of what's the likelihood of any plant in the country experiencing an earthquake larger than it's designed to withstand. And Indian Point was at the top of that list. It's more likely to have an earthquake that can't withstand than any other plant in the country. It's not, the earthquake it will experience won't be as large as ones in California, but if you're not, the protection levels aren't nearly as high either. So it was at the top of that list. Which caught a lot of attention there for a while.
And Rochelle, what do you think the odds are? Give us a scenario, a potential or even likely scenario, on getting these reactors shut from California within the next 10 or 15 minutes.
Well, maybe months. Good, but Harvey.
How quick can we do these things? Okay, we're down to 2 minutes here, so real quick.
Okay. Well, we go into hearings again this week on Diablo Canyon, how much money they've spent on seismic studies and whether or not they've done the seismic studies that the state has required them to do. Because unlike other states, California required specific studies to be done before they can submit a license renewal. And so they have done some of those studies. They have not followed the rules as usual. And so we're calling on that this Thursday in San Francisco. So
okay.
There's always opportunities, and the Alliance will be there to discuss what they've done, if they've done it right, how much they've asked us to pay, and whether or not we should pay it.
Okay, we've been talking to two of the greats of the safe energy movement in this country. I'm deeply honored. David Lockbaum of the Union of Concerned Scientists. That's UCSUCA.org. Yeah, I'm sorry, UCSUSA.org. Right, David?
That's correct.
And Rochelle Becker of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, the A4NR.org. Is that right, Rochelle?
That's right. Yes.
All right. Well, listen, I am hoping that we can get Diablo shut before I have to go get arrested there again. although I did enjoy it quite a bit last time. It was 30 years ago. I'm just not as young as I used to be. But if we got it, we got it. So thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. And I hope to have a follow-up show, as we did with San Onofre, to celebrate the shutdown of the Diablo Canyon nukes. This has been the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. Harvey Wasserman will be back with another great show for you next week. And thank you so much, David Lockbaum and Rochelle Becker.
Thanks, Harvey.
Bye-bye.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're going to have a
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, got so. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.